You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. Hannah, it's great to see you again. People out there in the universe, it's great for you to be listening to us.
Yeah, welcome back to No BS Nutrition for another week, another episode. What's new with you, T?
What's new with me? Today I made a meal for Thomas's mom. She's coming over. She came over today for dinner, and I love fried chicken. Ugh. I really love the taste of corn batter. Like I like using cornmeal over flour because you actually tastes like corn, and I really love that. And today I forgot to put cornstarch in with my mixture, so it was literally like it looked like corn flakes and chicken because it was just like tattered up pieces of corn and egg and chicken. So it wasn't pretty, but it tasted good.
I've never made fried chicken. That sounds delish.
Also, today was the first time that I ever marinated chicken in buttermilk.
Oh, I've done that before.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's really
and also,
good.
For people listening, I didn't use buttermilk. I just used milk and lemon juice.
Yeah, but that's the same thing, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, the amount of substitutions I use when I make recipes is probably illegal.
I have a funny story that just reminded me of something. You know what? You're a really good cook. And, okay, so is Emily, but I have a story about my
friend
Emily.
That's very kind coming from you.
Yeah. You know Emily.
Emily, oh, I love Emily. Emily, do you listen? DM us if you do.
I honestly don't know if she, I know she did. I don't know if she still does, but I really should have given her, like, a pseudonym. I should not be throwing her under the bus here.
But everyone knows we are talking about Emma Watson. We call her Emily just because we're really close.
Totally.
But, yeah.
So... No, the story's
Emma's
not going to make
fan
sense.
Of the pod.
But when I was in high school, I had this big group of friends and a close-knit group of girlfriends. And one time for our friend's birthday, I forget whose birthday it was, Emily made a cake for her birthday. And she brought it to, like, the birthday party. She substituted, like...
Too many things.
Every single ingredient in the cake. And she was like, oh, I just figured it would work. And so, like, for cocoa powder, she used, like, hot chocolate powder.
Oh.
And, like, just...
Was it, like, too sweet? Was it, like, really weirdly rich?
I don't remember, but it was disgusting. Yeah. And she knows it was disgusting. And everyone was like, this cake is so good.
That's really cute.
Yeah. We still joke about it today with some of our friends, like, from high school, because it was
hot chocolate mix instead of cocoa powder is true. That is not a substitute.
No.
Like, I've done some bad things before, but that is really...
It was bad, but it was hilarious. We still laugh about it. So anyways, that just reminded me. I guess we can just jump in. So today we're going to be talking about...
We've really been jumping in lately.
You know what?
Wait,
I like...
What do you mean today we're going to be talking
wait,
about...
Just wait. Just going to tell them, and then I was just going to, like, ask you a question. So today we're going to be talking about oat milk, but before we do that, Tariq...
I got so offended. Like,
I know. Jeez, just let me live. I knew what I was doing. Okay, Tariq.
I trust you.
What nutrition or wellness BS did you come across this week?
Well, you know, thank you, Hannah, for asking me that lovely question. And, you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast. Netflix's Unwell.
Yes. Wait, did we talk
Is
about
that
it?
Wait, actually, that's not what I meant to say. I'm thinking that because you know why, but what I'm really wanting to say is Netflix is down to earth.
Which one is that? The Zac Efron one, right? Yeah, we've talked about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would love to have him on the pod.
Hell yeah.
We don't even have to talk about nutrition.
Definitely not.
So we previously talked about Netflix's Down to Earth.
Yes.
And I came across this really cool, like, fun article from The Insider, which I'll link.
Okay.
And it's called All the Problematic Pseudoscience Shared by Zac Efron's Health Guru and Guests in His New Netflix Show, Down to Earth. So it was like this list of like weird BS claims. Some of them obviously I've heard of before because some of them are so notorious. Right. But one of them, I hadn't heard of before. Anyway, one of them that stuck out to me is one I was familiar with because I actually like use this product all the time in the lab.
Oh.
So basically the BS thing, the BS myth is that drinking filtered water is bad for you.
Right? Oh, okay.
This
okay,
is something
okay.
apparently that they talk about on the show, and I've heard this before, that drinking filtered water is bad for you. So, I mean, spoiler alert, it's not true. Like, the water, either, like, from a bottle that you buy or from your home filter, is not bad for you at all.
No, why would it be water bad is, for you?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Water is also not a huge source of anything.
No, it's like, hydration. It's water.
Not really, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a huge source of any mineral.
Right.
So, unsafe, unfiltered water, like, if you're lucky enough to live in a place that has safe, unfiltered water out of your tap, versus filtered water that you filter at home, is not a dramatic difference.
Right.
Like, it's going to probably change the taste a little bit, but it's not a dramatic difference. There's also this, like, weird myth about chlorine causing cancer, chlorine in the water, but it's not true. It's, like, such trace amounts, et cetera.
Right.
So, basically, one of the things that people say is the reason that drinking filtered water is bad for you is because it allegedly leaches minerals out of your system. Okay, so because it has, it's like this weird, it's this, the fake idea comes from a poor understanding of osmosis, right? So because presumably filtered water has less molecules in it, it's going to, like, osmotic pressure is going to force molecules, chemicals, and minerals out of your body, as you know, into the filtered water.
Okay,
that's
gotcha.
Not true. So, like, the way that our body stores, let's say, calcium is so complex, and they get into this a little bit in the article. It's, like, seriously hidden in many different places in our body cells. That it's not that easy for filtered water to drag minerals and ions out of your body. So what is true, though, is that there can be problems if you are regularly drinking huge amounts of distilled water. If distilled water is your main water source, that can get a little bit murky health-wise. So regular filtered water is nowhere near as filtered as distilled water.
Okay.
People might be familiar with distilled water because it's those, like, really huge tubs. You often see people buying them at the stores. Probably one of the biggest reasons that people buy them is because they have sleep apnea. And sleep apnea machines, you have to wear the mask at night because your airways are constricting. They use distilled water. So people buy distilled water to refill their sleep apnea machines.
Okay.
Usually people aren't drinking it. And if people ever drink distilled water, I mean, you're not really going to suffer in that instant at all. Like, it's not going to destroy your body. But if it's your main source of water, that can be a problem. Because it's so heavily filtered, it lacks minerals completely that your, you know, regular water that you have might have. So there are trace amounts of, like, salts, like potassium salts in water,
mm-hmm.
that are important for our body. Because when we have a lack of those minerals, we can get into some chemical imbalances. Without potassium, for example, you can get the shakes. Potassium is a really crucial element for our neurons to work, including our motor neurons that help us move. So, but that would also require, if you were to ever suffer from that problem, it would never come from filtered water, regular filtered water that you make yourself at home with a filter,
right.
or that you buy from a store. It would come from your main source of water being huge amounts of distilled water, not filtered, but distilled. So it's completely junk that filtered water is bad for you. Regular water, it's it's not good. It's not like, quote, good for you. It's like good because it hydrates you, but there's no,
nah,
there's no healthful, nutritious component of the water that's like so crucial.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's being lost in filtered water.
Did they say that in
Down to Earth?
Down to Earth. Did they say that filtered water is bad for you? I don't remember. I remember the
episode.
Yeah, that
was one of their claims.
I remember the episode. It was like they sat down. It was like Zac Efron and his health guru friend and Anna Kendrick. She just joined them for fun.
Oh.
And they were at, okay, I think they were at some restaurant or something in LA. And they basically had a lesson from a water sommelier, which,
oh yes,
this I'm pretty it. Sure is not a thing. Like, I literally think this guy made up that title. Like, just,
I mean, water can be different from different places around the world. Yeah. Different places around the world have like different mineral compositions in the ground, yeah, where water might, yeah, be flowing by, but it's not, none of it is magical.
No, absolutely. And that
none
whole,
of it's better than water, like any water you can get anywhere else.
Yeah, that whole lesson that this water sommelier gave, the entire time I was literally like screaming at my TV, like, this is such bullshit, because it was just ridiculous. And so I totally agree, like, the idea that filtered water would be bad for you compared to another
tap water.
Yeah, tap water is like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, you're not gaining anything crucial out of the tap water that you're missing out in the filtered water.
Right. Yeah.
I definitely don't recommend drinking distilled water as your main source of water. So my tie into that is we use distilled water a lot in the lab because distilled water is so much cleaner than tap water. And because there can be trace minerals or trace elements in regular tap water.
Yeah.
And because that can change from, you know, day to day, the composition of the tap water can be different. You never want it to influence your experiments. So that's why having distilled water, you're always certain that, you know, it's free of minerals up to a certain point.
Yeah, totally.
So that you know, that's not like a variable in your experiments, for example. But you're never supposed to drink it as your main source of water. So basically, you can drink filtered water and you can know that you're not missing out on anything that people are saying that they're getting out of tap water.
Yeah. And we don't drink water for the, like you said, we don't drink water for the purpose of like
nourishing.
Obtaining minerals. We eat food, right, to do that. We drink water for a different reason. So, I mean, your water shouldn't be your main source of, you know, potassium or calcium or,
there's no like macro or micronutrients that you're going to miss out on if you drink filtered
water.
Right.
Based on the water that you drink. That was great. That's really interesting. And that is definitely one big piece of pseudoscience that came out of that docuseries. So thank you.
Thank you. I can't imagine. The field of water sommelier must be so, like, it must be rare to be a water sommelier if there's even more than one of them. So I feel like the market's ripe for, like, it's probably a booming career move. So if anyone's studying as a water sommelier, please slide in the DMs and tell us about how your experience is.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. All right, guys. So I already mentioned, but we're going to be talking about a trending topic right now, mm-hmm, which is oat milk. Like, what is oat milk? Why is it trending? So have you had oat milk, Terry?
So in the height of, I think we're still in the height of the oat milk.
I think so.
Craze. Early on, I thought, oh, this is interesting. I don't have any milk at home right now, which I usually do. And I really wanted to have some cereal. So I thought, oh, I have oats. People say you can make it in the blender.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. So I went, tried to make it in the blender. My blender is clearly not good enough to do that. And I tried to strain it through a coffee filter. It was just gunk. I got nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
But you haven't tried...
So that was it.
Okay, so you haven't tried, like, the store-bought cartons of oat milk before.
No, that was my only experience with oat milk, and then I thought, I'm okay.
You're okay. You'll pass.
What about you?
I have tried it. I have had it in lattes. I bought it from the store before. I don't really know how I feel about it. I know some people are, like, really gung-ho about oat milk. They love it. They swear by it. It's their favorite, like, non-dairy milk alternative. But I'm iffy. I still don't know if I love it or not. But we wanted to talk about it today to kind of bring to light, you know, I guess kind of a overarching everything you need to know about oat milk. We'll talk about what it is, how it's made, you know, the nutrition facts and how they compare to other, to dairy milk and other dairy alternatives. We'll talk about the environmental aspect of it.
Did you read my notes?
No, I didn't. But we literally have the exact same notes. Yeah.
We're on par. As always, Hannah and I are just synced somehow.
So I guess we can start with a little introduction about oat milk. So in the last, I would say in the last 10 years, non-dairy milk alternatives have been really, like, rising in popularity.
And I mean, they were already pretty popular in some parts of the world. Like, in Southeast Asia, soy milk has been a staple for many, many generations, right?
Yeah. So I think soy milk is probably the one that's been around the longest. And then these, the ones based out of, like, nuts and coconut and things like that have, coconut milk from the actual coconut has existed for a long time. Right. But then there's the cartons of coconut milk that, serve as almost like a milk alternative. Oat milk has really, like, it's been like the, in terms of food trends in 2020, I feel like oat milk is really up there.
It's the ingenue of new foods.
Yeah.
It's like young, it's here, it's like, people are excited.
Wow,
it's kind of spunky. Who is this?
Totally. Yeah. That's oat milk. That you just described it perfectly. But, Tarek, we have to talk about, like, is it worthy of this title? Why does it get so much hype? Like, these are the things we want to dive into. So,
I love that question.
Yeah. Before we do that, I just want to point out that we are going to be, and we already have referred to oat milk as milk. However, in Canada...
PBD? Are you going to talk to us about PBDs? Is that what you're saying?
What's PBDs?
Plant-based drinks.
Oh, there you go. Or plant-based PBB, plant-based beverages. I was looking at, like, the terms from, like, the Food and Drug Administration, and Drug Regulations. So in Canada, anyways, the Food and Drug Regulations say that milk and the use of the word milk shall be the normal lacteal secretion obtained from the mammary gland of the cow.
So, they're really trying not to get us to not confuse that with anything else.
Right, I know, right? So, in order to meet the common name requirement, the term milk is referenced to only milk. As described.
I smell big dairy. I smell big dairy lobbying for that.
So you may have noticed in the grocery store or if you've bought, like, obviously I'm sure many people listening have bought store-bought non-dairy milk alternatives, which usually have, instead of milk on them, we all refer to them as milk, but on the package or on the label, that usually will say soy beverage or oat beverage or...
And it's usually, I think we've talked about this briefly before, it's usually not in the same place in the grocery store as dairy milk.
You're
because, again, they dairy producers buy out that space in grocery stores. If people don't know, like, companies buy shelf space in grocery stores.
Yeah.
If people don't know
that. We talked about that before, like, when we talked about before, I think you mentioned that as well. And
that dairy is a part of that, a big part of that.
Totally. So I just wanted to put that out there and just let you guys know that we will be calling it milk, but technically, or, like, from the Food and Drug Regulation standpoint, it's actually not allowed to be called milk. It's a PBD or a PBB. So let's get into it. So what is oat milk and how is it made?
Yeah. I as we're talking about what oat milk is and how it's made, I kind of wanted to also get us thinking about why people might drink plant-based beverages, plant-based drinks, or milk alternatives. And I want to revisit this question at the very end. So, you know, people might think of, you know, lactose allergies, lactose intolerances, if somebody chooses to be vegan, or if somebody's choosing to, I mean, and Hannah was hinting to this before, we'll talk about, you know, an environmental impact. And of course, you know, many things in the food industry are not always amazing for the environment and not always very sustainable. And we've talked about this before, the greenwashing effect. Although plant-based beverages are, of course, plant-based, sometimes they can benefit from the greenwashing effect to make it look as if they are a much more environmentally friendly choice than, you know, another alternative, when in fact maybe they're just as bad or even worse. So I just kind of wanted to like get that like percolating in people's minds as we talk about it. So one of the papers that I'll give a little intro and then I'll hand it off to you.
Totally.
One of the papers that I was reading is called Amino Acid Composition of Novel Plant-Based Drinks from Oat, Lentil, and Pea. And basically they talk about how there's an increased demand for plant-based drinks, and among that is oat milk. And something interesting I thought was the increase, like, per year is as much as 30% each year worldwide.
Wow.
It increases every year how much more demand there is for oat milk, or for alternative milk in general. So many countries recommend cow milk intake, dairy milk intake of about 1 to 3 cups a day. Although, we've talked about this before, the Canada's Food Guide doesn't specifically do this anymore, which is huge drums. but dairy milk, as we'll keep talking about, I'm sure, has a balanced amino acid composition. So that's something that's really important as we keep talking about oat milk as well, is that what is like a balanced amino acid composition versus one that's unbalanced? So people probably know this, but a little refresher. We need amino acids to make proteins that basically run everything in our body. And, you know, there's proteins in a lot of things. Proteins in vegetables, even though people pretend like there aren't. Of course, oat has proteins as well.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the amino acids that make up our proteins, we actually can't build ourselves in our bodies. And we need to get them through food intake.
Yep.
Or whatever kind of supplementary intake that some people might use. So dairy milk is an interesting way to, or a good way maybe to get, or one good way to get a balanced amino acid profile in your, you know, in your meal, because it has all of those necessary amino acids that we don't make ourselves.
Right.
As do other foods and other, you know, protein sources, but milk does as well. So unfortunately, most, not all, but most plant-based products fall really, really short of that mark, and are often only contain less than 1% of protein in a serving, which is really, really low compared to dairy milk.
Yeah.
So one of these essential amino acids is lysine, and it contains about, in oats, there are only about 575 milligrams of lysine per 100 grams of oat, okay? And the recommended intake for lysine is about 2,100 milligrams per day for an adult of, let's say, 70 kilograms. So we would need 365 grams of oat, which would be about 1,344 calories of oats alone, to get enough lysine per day. So obviously that would not lead to a balanced diet if we were to consume all of our lysine just from oat milk, for example, so, as opposed to other protein uses.
So I have a question. When you say oat, are you referring to oat milk? Yeah. Like we'd have to consume that much oat milk or that many oats?
So exactly, we'd have to consume that much oat. And 1 liter of oat milk only uses about 100 grams of oats.
Right.
So, and a lot of oats are filtered out in that process.
Right.
So you don't even get the 100 gram of oat in your oat milk. So think about, so you need 1,344 calories of oat alone. You'd need a megaton more calories of oat milk alone in order to get your daily recommended intake of lysine. So even though, maybe I'll I'll stop here and then I can keep going on this for a bit. But even though you can fortify some plant-based product, plant-based dairy products, you can't really shove in a lot more protein than is already in there. So this is kind of like a tricky thing. I always think, oh, if something's low in protein, maybe I can find a super boosted protein version of it. But it's actually kind of tough to stuff protein in some things. And maybe I'll get into that a little bit later. Maybe as like talking about how oat milk is made, maybe if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can kind of jump into that. So, I mean, and you've already kind of mentioned it a little bit, but basically the production process of oat milk is similar to that of like an almond or another like nut milk. So really oats are soaked in water, and you mentioned this because you did it at home. You soak oats in water
and then you
blend them or pulverize them in a blender. I guess, you know, high powered blenders are probably best. Mm-hmm. And then you strain that out, that blended mixture, which creates a subtle tasting, I would say, plant milk. So what's interesting what I learned is interesting about oat milk is that because oats actually absorb more water than nuts would, you know, oats, you know, they really, you soak them in water and they basically like absorbs all of the water. Whereas nuts don't really do that. When you blend oats for oat milk, you actually get more of the actual food or the actual oats winding up in the milk or like passing through the strainer or the cheesecloth or whatever you're using. So that kind of helps to give a couple things, a creamier texture sometimes than certain like nut milks without other needed ingredients. Although I will say a lot of oat milk products or store-bought oat milk still do have oils added to them for a more creamy texture. But that also means that it's more possible for, you know, some more nutrition from the oats to pass through into the oat milk as well. So some examples could be like fiber. Oat milk does have a little more fiber than other milks, and certain trace minerals as well. But again, it probably wouldn't be in such large amounts because it does, you know, the amount of oat that's actually in oat milk is so much less. So
right, exactly.
What I was going to say is store-bought, I already did say this, but a few things that store-bought oat milk might have added to them are, I already mentioned, oils. So things like sunflower or canola oil. And this is to add fat or creaminess to make it a little more comparable to something like cow's milk. And then there also are certain vitamins or minerals that may be added, like calcium or vitamin D, B12, zinc, etc. And I'll talk about this a little bit more in a little bit. And then also some gums for thickening. So things like locust bean gum or guar gum or gelling gum, whatever. Those things are usually added again to kind of thicken the liquid and add a bit of a creamier texture. So that's kind of oat milk, how it's made.
Right. That's really wonderful. And it leads really well into talking about, you know, how maybe some things are added into oat milk if we're trying to fortify it, like I was talking about before. So, and Hannah, you made this point, this like such a good point, is that, you know, some more of the oat might pass through an oat milk because it can get pulverized and absorb water than maybe, let's say, some nut milks. However, we have to take into consideration, as you know, the density of the nutrients in that product. Yeah. So, for example, oats really aren't as nutrient dense as some other sources of plant-based beverages. So we were talking about how you can get as little as 1% of protein in a serving of oat milk. And I actually checked online my local grocery store, and it was pretty much the same. It got up to 3% in some cases. Okay. That was the max that I saw.
Yeah.
So apparently you can't just, and I didn't really know this, but you can't just shove protein and stuff. I thought maybe you could just like fortify stuff and like make it more than just the micronutrients and add in like a bunch of protein. But apparently you can't do that because it literally sometimes won't dissolve. So because oat milk is really starchy, kind of like other plant-based dairy products, it can be so oversaturated with starch that different components like protein will settle and they won't stay in the solution. So it'll just be like really chunky and almost like powdery at the bottom, and everything will kind of fall out of solution. So you can't just add a bunch of protein to oat milk to make it, for example, as protein rich as cow's milk.
Right.
So there was this paper that I was reading. It was kind of interesting. They had the idea, and I wonder if the industry will move in this way, but they had the idea of mixing different plant-based proteins in together to make a new plant-based beverage. So they were mixing together pea milk, lentil, or peas, lentils, and oats, and making a milk out of that that would have a more balanced amino acid profile.
Right.
And that would contain, therefore, more protein. Anyway, I don't think anyone's necessarily doing that. Like, I haven't seen a product like that at all.
There is. Have you? Yeah.
Oh, there is.
Silk, you know, Silk, it's a the non-dairy beverage brand. They actually have a an almond and cashew protein plant milk.
Oh, nice. Okay.
With 8 grams of protein. And I'm just looking at it here, and it has, I believe it's pea protein that it has added to it.
Oh, nice.
To kind of bump up the protein.
Well, there you go.
I just brought it up on my browser here when you were talking about that, because I knew there was one that I had seen at, I think I've seen it at Walmart, actually, if people are curious. But
yeah, I mean, that was really all I had for the, you know, composition of oat milk and, you know, why you can't really make it as protein rich as some other alternatives.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll let you go, because I was ready. I'm pretty ready to get into the environmental impact at this point.
I had heard in conversation and online that oat milk is like the one of the most environmentally friendly plant milks out there, like compared to almond milk, compared to soy milk, etc. And I hadn't really fact checked it. I just kind of had heard it. And so when I was preparing for this chat, I took a look online and I found an article on BBC News, I believe. Did you see this one?
Nice. No, I read one from ediblebrooklyn.com.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, the BBC News article, I'll link it. It's called Climate Change, Which Vegan Milk is Best? And the article is based off of and referencing in a University of Oxford, Oxford University? Mm. Which one is it?
Oxford University. University of Cambridge, Oxford University.
So they cite this article, this journal article called Reducing Food's Environmental Impacts Through Producers and Consumers. Mm. And this article is actually, it's very long. It's pretty neat. But and basically, they consolidated data on the multiple environmental impacts of 38,000 farms producing 40 different agricultural goods around the world in a meta-analysis comparing various types of food production systems. I'll link that as well, but the BBC article obviously is a little more digestible, easily digestible.
Sure.
So they just basically, they have some great visuals around basically like which milk should you choose, and then it compares the environmental impact of different different milks, including dairy milk, rice milk, soy milk, oat milk, and almond milk. And they look at emissions, carbon emissions, they look at land use, and they look at water use, which is pretty cool. As many of us probably already know, dairy milk pretty much ranks the worst for all of those things. So it produces...
Anything to do with animal agriculture is the worst. Yeah.
So dairy milk produced far more emissions. It uses far more land and water to produce dairy milk compared to any of the plant milks. Probably the worst ranking plant milk was actually almond milk, because it does actually, no, it looks like rice milk.
I thought maybe soy.
No, soy was actually pretty impressive.
Soy is pretty good.
Soy and oat actually.
Oh, wait, actually, you're right. Soy is really good.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
I'm reading my notes wrong.
Oh, no, it's okay. So soy and oat seemed to rank the best. And then almond and rice they seem to be tied a little bit for the worst plant milks, in terms of environmental impact. So it looks like oat milk ranks the best for carbon emissions, for land use, I don't know, soy milk and oat milk are pretty much tied for land use. And then mm-hmm. soy milk is actually a little bit better in terms of water use. So I would say soy and oat milk are probably tied. But that's pretty impressive yeah. because it's new, you know, it's fairly new on in terms of options. And it seems to be one of the more environmentally friendly ones. So I think right. that's probably why, one of the reasons why it's so popular.
That's a good point. I mean, it might be surprising to some people that not all, you know, plant-based drinks are created equally. And that is part of, and what's part of that is what Hannah was talking about before, the processes with which those, you know, alternative milk products are made. And the question gets kind of complicated. I found this interesting. The article I was reading puts on the nuance of, you know, what is best for the environment, but what is also going to be best nutritionally? Mm-hmm. So talking about the environment alone, yes, we can make a lot of conclusions about what might be best, but yep. also what's best nutritionally in conjunction with what's best for the environment. So obviously different companies have different processes that use, you know, however much water versus this versus that, or whatever other products or functions that produce greenhouse gases. So definitely, like Hannah, you were saying, some plant-based drinks are much better than others. And actually, the environmental impact seems to go pretty hand-in-hand with nutritional value. So if people were to imagine making a cup of almond milk, that actually pretty much has the same environmental... let's imagine it has the same environmental impact as soy milk. It doesn't, but let's imagine. But let's say soy milk, on average, has... I don't know, 3 times as much protein as almond milk. Was it worth it to invest all of the environmental impact energy into producing almond milk, even though soy milk has 3 times as much protein? Right. So this is the kind of question that we can be asking. So we can ask, and the article says, not necessarily how environmentally impactful something is cup to cup, but rather per gram of protein, for example. It's another way that That's we can look at it. So as you were saying, soy milk is like way better than many of the other alternative milk products in terms of environmental impact. It only uses 1/10 of the amount of water that almond milk does.
Yeah.
And provides way more protein per cup. So unfortunately, and this goes back to what you were talking about earlier with the process of making plant-based drinks, even though almonds are so nutrient dense, right? Like you think of almonds as a really has like fat, has protein, right? Really nutrient dense food. Even though it is, making milk with almonds eliminates a lot of those nutrients because, like you were saying, nuts don't absorb water in the same way that, let's say, oats would. So it's kind of a sad loss for like that 10 times as much water that went into growing almonds and making almond milk, because you get way less nutritional, you get a way poorer nutritional source than, let's say, soy milk.
Right.
The interesting thing about growing soybeans, too, that I found out is that they fix nitrogen in the soil, which is really important for, you know, basically like future crop growth, and it relieves the necessity of, you know, using new fertilizers in the soil every time that you grow a new crop.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because soy is being grown around the world so much, it actually ends up, I didn't know this, it's a pretty big contributor to the Amazon's deforestation. So something that I learned is a good idea, obviously, I mean, it's a good idea overall, but it was a good reminder. We can make choices that are better for the environment, right? Specifically, let's say when we're talking about soy milk. So we can be buying Canadian-grown, or wherever you live, grown soy products. And one of these in Canada is So Nice. So Nice uses Canadian-grown soy to make all their beverages, and we would love to be sponsored by them. I'm just going to throw that out there. So what about compared to dairy milk, right? That's a big question. So there's this complexity... there's no doubt that dairy milk is way worse, you know, environmentally, sure. like you were saying.
Yeah.
But there's a complexity to the question of what nutritional advantages might outweigh environmental right. impact. So plant-based drinks might have lower environmental impacts on the whole, but they can lack some key nutrients that maybe are found in dairy milk. that maybe are more difficult to fortify in some plant-based drinks than others. And you were right, oat milk ranks really highly as being like good for the environment. It uses pretty much 60% less energy and 80% less greenhouse gas emissions than cow's milk. So like way better for the environment, mm-hmm. right? And although, you know, it can be more nutritious than almond milk in some cases, it's not nutritious as, say, soy, like we were talking about. Because yeah. soy has probably the highest and most balanced protein content of all plant-based drinks, which leads me to re-ask that question of why do we consider milk alternatives, right? So we were talking earlier about lifestyle choices. That's probably the first thing that people think of. But maybe something else to think of is why you're looking for a dairy milk alternative. Let's say you're not vegan. And I drink dairy milk alternatives all the time. So why am I drinking these dairy milk alternatives? If you're looking for nutrition, you're probably going to turn to, let's say, soy or almond milk. You know, they're much more calorie dense, so per serving. So you're actually, you know, getting some calories out of it, as opposed to maybe some other plant-based drinks, which have less calories per serving. And especially soy milk has a pretty balanced protein profile.
Yeah, so soy milk? No, I was just going to say soy milk, it's closest in terms of nutrition profile to cow's milk. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But if you're looking to just replace milk in, like, let's say, recipes, or you just, like, want to have cereal with milk, have whatever you want, I think, is my opinion anyway. It's like, it's just that question of, why am I drinking this? Am I drinking this because I think I'm getting, let's say, as much protein as dairy milk or whatever? Or am I drinking it because I want a milk alternative and I don't want it to be dairy milk because, let's say, I care about the environment and I'm not really considering its nutritional value. I'm just considering it as, like, you know, an alternative to dairy that I can just, like, use throughout my day.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually had a list of, like, and it totally relates to what you're saying, is, like, some tips for choosing, like, a non-dairy beverage or a milk alternative.
Oh, nice.
I kind of rhymed those off. And you've already mentioned some of it, but I did have, like, the nutrition facts for oat milk up.
Nice.
And I wanted to kind of compare them to, like, dairy milk and almond milk. Nice. So just quickly, one cup serving of oat milk gives approximately, and these things will probably vary, like, brand to brand, product to product, where you live, etc., but let's just say they're estimates. A one cup serving of oat milk provides anywhere from 110 to 130 calories, around 2.5 grams of fat. It could be up to 5 grams of fat, depending on what's added to it. No saturated fat, around 16 grams of carbohydrates, 2 to 4 grams of fiber, 2 to 3 grams of protein per cup. And then if fortified, anywhere from 25 to 35% of the recommended daily allowance of calcium, and 25% recommended daily allowance for vitamin D. I'm seeing
they're putting cow's milk and oat
milk. I'm seeing things, notes yeah. on, like, seeing dairy daily, and oh, like yeah. all they look exactly the same on my notes. So compared to, let's say, 2% dairy milk, oat milk would mm-hmm. have similar, maybe a little bit less calories, a little bit right. less fat, a few more grams of carbohydrates. So it's about 13 grams of carbohydrates in a cup of 2% dairy milk. And that would be primarily from the sugar, lactose. Oat milk would have more fiber. There's no fiber in dairy milk. Oat milk, like you said already, would have less protein. Cow's milk has about 8 grams of protein per cup, whereas, like I said, oat milk has 2 to 3 grams of protein. And then,
and people should consider the composition of that protein, like, what's really,
yeah, like, yeah, you said,
it has less protein, but it has less of the essential
amino, yeah, it's not a complete protein. And then, oh, just in terms of calcium and vitamin D, if the oat milk is fortified, it would have similar amounts of calcium and vitamin D as cow's milk. And then just compared to almond milk, so I know you mentioned almond milk as a source of calories, but I always yeah. thought almond milk was, like, one of the non-dairy beverages that had less calories.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, yeah, what I was reading said it was, like, a better source than some. But yeah, you're probably right.
When I think of almond milk, I know from what I looked at, or at least the brands I looked at, almond milk had the least amount of calories at like 30 calories per cup.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is
that's really low.
Minimal. Yeah. So I was just going to
say, it's basically filtered water at this point.
Right, exactly. So, so obviously oat milk has more calories. It would have a similar amount of fat, more carbs. Almond milk, I think, has like 1 gram of carbohydrates per cup. And I think it might have 1 gram of fiber. So you're getting more fiber in the oat milk. Almond milk has about 2 grams of protein, so similar. And then again, if fortified, they would have similar amounts of calcium and vitamin D. So that's just a little nutrition comparison of, you know, dairy milk. And then obviously one of the more popular non-dairy beverages, which is almond milk. And one thing I really wanted to highlight is that I think another reason that oat milk is so popular is because people say that it's more affordable to make at home, you know, compared to like almond milk or cashew milk.
Yeah, if you own a Vitamix.
Totally. If you own a $600 Vitamix. But what my first thought as a dietitian, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, sure, it might be cheaper. Obviously, oats are much more affordable than almonds or cashews. We talked about big cashew.
Big nut.
with Lauren in the plant-based nutrition episode in season 2. But what I want to say about making your own non-dairy milk at home is that there's no fortification if you're making it on your own at home. So whether you're making oat milk or almond milk or cashew milk, you're not getting some of the key things that are, you know, that plant products or plant beverages lack if they're not fortified, which is calcium and vitamin D.
Right. It's not even the protein that's the issue at this point. Yeah. It's the calcium
nutrients that are added because they're challenging to get, especially on, you know, a plant-based diet or if you're eating a lot of plant-based products. So that's just kind of my take. That was my thought because I've seen a lot of people online saying, oh my gosh, oat milk is so much cheaper. It's so much easier to make at home. I make it at home all the time, every week. And it's like, well, if you're like, just a heads up, if you're relying on oat milk as, you know, a hefty part of your diet or, you know, for you're eating it and everything, or you drink it a lot, you're missing out on, that calcium and vitamin D that would be added to it if you bought it from the store. And obviously you can't add calcium and vitamin D to your oat milk at home. So at least there's not a way that I'm aware of. Yeah. Yeah. Lastly, I guess I'll just dive into the tips that I have for choosing a non-dairy milk alternative and kind of some nuances that go along with it. So if you're going to choose oat milk, or really any other non-dairy milk, there's just some things that I want you to think about. So number one, like I've already said, you should try to make sure that it's fortified with vitamin D and calcium. You know, especially if you're like plant-based or vegan and you're going to be relying on this non-dairy beverage or non-dairy milk in place of milk in your diet, like in drinking it, in your cereal, etc. Like you're using it every way that you would milk.
You don't eat cheese, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So, and for oat milk, and you've already mentioned this, you shouldn't be relying on it for protein. If you were someone who, again, relied on dairy or dairy milk for protein, and then you stop eating dairy or dairy milk, or you go protein. I can't talk tonight.
Protein-free diet.
No.
Oh, that's new, actually. No one's doing that. Should we?
Is this a new trend? That's our new...
yeah.
No, I'm sorry. If you go vegan and you are someone who relied heavily on dairy for protein, oat milk, and again, even other nut milks don't provide the same amount of protein. So why are you looking
at your I can't hear nut without thinking of big cashew.
Big cashew, yeah. Yeah, so anyways, they don't provide the same amount of protein. And like we already said, soy milk would be your best bet in terms of something comparable to dairy milk in terms of protein. Like if you rely on milk or dairy for protein, then soy products are your best bet. if you're looking to make the switch. And then the last thing I wanted to say is to aim for unsweetened. You know, there's so many varieties of these plant-based drinks, PBDs, on the market, and a lot of them are sweetened, and you might not know it until you get home and like taste it, and you're like, wow, this is sweet. So aim for unsweetened, just because
it already contains sugars,
right? And you know, I don't want to like demonize things that have added sugars or like say that you shouldn't eat added sugars, but it is something in our diet that most of us eat enough of, and can, you know, mindfully try to eat less of, without
absolutely
obsessing about it. So anyways, I just wanted to make that point. And then lastly, something I just thought of again is I'm not a pediatric, or infant feeding specialist, but there are some things to consider as well. If you're choosing like a milk for your child, like say, your child has a cow's milk allergy and they can't drink milk, which for a lot of, you know, babies or 1 to 2 year olds, cow's milk is a lot of times like
I had it.
Yeah. Me too. It's a source of fat and protein and calories for a growing child. So you wouldn't want to be choosing like the most low calorie, low carb, non-dairy option for a child. I know that that's something that's attractive about things like almond milk or whatever for a lot of people, is that it's lower in calories.
Well, there's this huge movement of like not having nutrient dense foods and like filling yourself, quote, filling yourself up on like look at the, we've talked about this before, like you could eat a huge plate of carrots,
volume eating, that's what it's called. It's called volume eating.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So this is, I think, like maybe some people are choosing PBDs based on that principle.
Exactly. But so that's just kind of a little pointer that, you know, you should be considering who else is consuming it as well, when you buy it, and what their needs are too.
Well, if that's all you have, I would love to know. What's been tasty for you this week, Hannah?
Oh, thank you. I thought you'd never ask. Well, it's the holidays. Oh my gosh. By the time this episode comes up, it's literally going to be Christmas.
The week before Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Christmas Day.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Oh my gosh. It could be like the days leading up to Christmas. I don't know. But my tasty this week, what's been tasty to me this week, is the Pillsbury holiday cookies.
I knew this was coming. This is what, you know, we've come full circle. This is how the podcast started.
Did I talk about this last year?
And this is, yes, you did. And how they're Patrick's favorite. And now it's happening again.
Was this my tasty last year?
This was your tasty last year. I thought it was the same time of the year.
When I was writing it down in my notes,
But you know what that means? It's real. It's really your tasty.
It is. Yeah, I really love it. I'm not lying. Anyways, we decorated our Christmas tree this past weekend.
It looks amazing.
Thank you.
It looks really good. Thank you. Yeah.
And we wrapped some gifts. And we grabbed some Pillsbury holiday cookies from the grocery store. And I think we talked about this last year. But if you remember from me talking about this last year, they don't come in the roll anymore.
Oh, right. I remember. You were so mad. Yeah.
You know how they used to come in the roll and you had to slice out the cookies?
Some things still do, right? Some of the Pillsbury products, like the still come in the roll.
Cinnamon rolls and stuff, still do that. You have to slice them, and like the crescent.
So how does the cookie come now?
They come like in a box of individual cookies that you
pre-slice,
and you just put them on a baking sheet and bake them. So it's a little.
Why don't they bake them? Like at that
right,
point?
Right? Like, because you have to leave some like sense of nostalgia for
so that you like pretend that you're doing anything,
right?
I mean, I love buying prepared foods, don't get totally me wrong, but it's like just cook it at this point.
No, I get that. Anyways, so we enjoyed some of those cookies, and that's my tasty. It was delicious.
Love that.
Thank you.
Love that.
Thank you. I'm so glad. What's been tasty for you this week?
Oh, amazing. Thank you. Well, what's been tasty for me is actually similar to you, dessert, and also similar to the theme of the episode, dairy. I've been, you know, just for dessert every once in a while lately, I've been making like fresh whipped cream, put the bowl in the fridge, put the whisk in the fridge, get out the whipping cream, cold bowl, cold whisk, stir, stir, stir. You know, it's a little bit of exercise.
You do it with a whisk? And
yeah.
Oh my God. Good for you.
And it's a little bit of exercise. It's a few minutes and you get fresh whipped cream. And I don't know, nothing tastes better than fresh whipped cream.
I agree.
Like, just like, and like, it's just plain whipping cream. There's no added like air or whatever, like out of those like nitrous bottles, which is great sometimes, whatever. Don't get me wrong. But there's something about like fresh Big Dairy. I'm Big Dairy. Fresh dairy whipping cream. I wonder, are there plant-based whipping cream alternatives? Probably, like coconut cream, maybe?
Yeah, so that's what, in most, like, plant-based, homemade anyways, you would use, like, coconut cream.
Or you could use, like, aquafaba or whatever.
Yeah, you could.
To make.
The recipes that I've seen,
you can
like,
make meringue with coconut it. Coconut cream. Add sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess there are.
Yeah, there are some options for you to try it. No, I was just so surprised that you use a whisk. Like, I always use
it's just fun.
Hand mixers.
I know, but then you don't have to clean all that. You just clean the whisk, you're done. You know what I mean? You don't have to get anything out.
But you also have to work for, like, 10 minutes.
No, honestly, if you put the bowl in the fridge, put the whisk in the fridge, mm-hmm. let's say for, like, 10 minutes, mm-hmm. it takes, like, no time at all. Maybe 5 minutes tops.
Okay, I'll have to try. I probably won't, but you never know.
Well, on that note, thank you for listening this week. Make sure to follow us on socials, No BS Nutrition Podcast. And tell your friends. Tell your friends to leave a review. Tell your parents and tell your adults to leave a review. It's the holiday season, and I'd really love to see a giving spirit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, give us the gift of a 5-star rating and review.
And we'd love that.
We would love that. All right. Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays.
Yes. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
We will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.